Hey friend, welcome to the Mamahood After Trauma podcast. I'm your host, Emily Cleghorn. This podcast is for mamas navigating childhood trauma while also walking through mamahood. I'm so excited that you've decided to take some time out of your day to join me and tune in. I hope you find this podcast uplifting and empowering. Let's get to it. And welcome to this episode of the Mamahood After Trauma podcast. I am excited that you have taken some time out of your day to join me for this conversation. Today, we are joined by Danielle Burnock. Welcome, Danielle.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited about this.
Yeah, I'm excited too. So let's dive right in. And could you introduce yourself to the audience, share a little bit of your story, and how you serve in the trauma space now?
Okay. Well, I am a multiple childhood trauma survivor that I dismissed my trauma for a long time because I don't have sexual trauma is one of the things I don't have. And so that made it, you know, that's not really it then. And I was never in war and all the things that we tend to think are trauma, but I suffered a lot of different kinds of trauma, emotional trauma, religious trauma, grief trauma, all different kinds of things. And it really affected me as an adult. And all I knew was that I was miserable. I didn't really know what trauma was or what was wrong with me. I had no help through any of those trauma exposures I went through. Had no help going through any of them. No support, no comfort. Many of them, which weren't obvious, I never told anyone about. So no one could help me anyways if they wanted to. So when I became a parent, well, first off, I was never going to become a parent. I was never going to do that because I didn't want to screw someone up.
I can resonate with that. That was me.
Yeah, so in my book, my first book, Emerging with Wings, I talk about that. My husband has a whole chapter in there because I was never getting married and never having kids. And here I am, married for 43 years, two adult kids and six living grandchildren. So God had different plans.
Yeah.
I unpack the story of how me and my husband got together is very supernatural, almost like hit Twilight Zone music. Don't know. You're probably too young to know what Twilight Zone is. But those were supernatural stories and things that people couldn't explain. So it was like cue the eerie music, maybe is a better way to put it. And how is this happening? But you know, it's very, and it's funny too. It's funny because we were like stopping and doing this, making this weird face and trying to figure out our way through here because the Lord was leading us through it and it made no sense to us because neither one of us had been following the Lord for a really long time. So we were limping our way through this. And so Lord put us together and we both agreed we're not having kids because we're not messing them up. God had different plans. Mm-hmm. So on our honeymoon, the Lord put it in my heart to ask him for children. I'm like, no, I argued with him a lot. My friend lovingly calls it wrestling with God. I call it arguing because I was arguing till he won. But we finally sat down and prayed for them. I mean, I wasn't supposed to be able to have kids and my husband was not supposed to be able to have kids. We didn't want to have kids, but God wanted us to have kids. So we sat down, prayed for them. God gave us their names. They came. I got the order of them backwards. I thought I had my son first and my daughter second, but my daughter came first. And I remember I'm in the hospital, you know, and they're going to let me take this baby home. And I'm like, what if I break it? I was so scared. So scared. My saving grace is actually the saving grace of God. I just threw myself on the grace of God, not even really knowing the grace of God at that time either. But my ignorance, I think God used for my benefit. Because he helped. He brought along things along the way. And I am astounded at the emotional intelligence that my children have. I am just astounded at it because I suffered childhood emotional neglect. And I did the best I could. I didn't know that was a thing then. Mm-hmm. I just knew what I didn't have, and I tried to give them what I wished I would have had. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know really what that was. I read so many books. I looked at people I saw who were raising children and seemed to be doing it well. I'm like, I'm going to be like them. I'm going to be like them. And kind of like watched them to learn. And mm-hmm. so I stumbled my way through. My children are adults. They have children of their own. And as I watched them parent their kids in their imperfect way, because there's no perfect parent, I still am astounded at their emotional intelligence, how they listen to their kids' emotions and, you know, walk them through that. So if I could give you mama's hope, if you just care and you do whatever you can do, there's hope. There's hope, there's hope, there's hope, there's hope. And when we fall down and make a mistake, then there's healing. And then we can mm-hmm. learn and we can grow. As I was telling Emily before we started, my daughter kept a journal when she was a teenager, lots of journals. And recently she's been reading through them and she said, if I want to talk about something in there, can I do that? I said, absolutely. I'm probably guilty and I'm sorry. Because I think it's important for a parent to own where they fell down, because you're going to fall down because nobody's perfect. And so I'm, as I said, I'm astounded at my children as they're raising their kids. My oldest grandson is battling leukemia, and watching my daughter and her husband support him through this and come alongside him through this in such a loving and powerful way. And they're being traumatized by it. You can see that it's leaving a mark, but they're going through it together. And so that's going to make it, I don't know the word that goes there. It's not easier. Easier is not the right word that goes there. It's going to make it survivable, and then we'll recover afterwards because we're going through it together. And my son and his wife they have two biological kids and two kids that they adopted out of foster care who have, you know, trauma backgrounds of a varying different kind. And so watching them, you know, pour into them, I'm like, man, I want to look, who raised these kids? Because they have skills that God put in them. So I want to share that hope, because I felt so completely inept. And as I sent you that article, I don't know if you had a chance to read that, by the lady who, she said, you know, don't expect your kids to understand you if you have trauma, and they don't have trauma. And that helped me not look for validation from them. Say, okay, that's not a thing. I got to get it somewhere else. So after my kids' empty nest, after empty nest is when I really had big strides in healing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I limped along the way and healed all along the way and beat myself up for how slow it was taking. And it was taking a long time, one because it needed to, and the other one because I didn't have the tools that I am offering people now. That's why mm-hmm. I want to create for people what I wish I would have had available to me. Because mm-hmm. you know, you don't just pray in Jesus' name and the trauma just goes away and you're perfectly fine. That's just not a thing. I'm sorry. It's not a thing. If you're looking for magic, it's not there. So I want to convey that. And so much of the church, they push away the psychology part, and the psychology part pushes the faith part away. And I marry the two together. Yeah. Because I believe we need both. We need faith and we need science. We need to know God made these bodies, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, we believe, but, you know, we're humans. So it's my passion to help people with that. And my first book paved the way for everything I do because of the response that I got from it. Like, oh, wow, my story really helps people. Really? It's a thing? And I learned through that. So telling our stories is really powerful. It's why you having this podcast is important. And I have mine, and telling the stories. And a gentleman I interviewed hasn't been published yet, but part of how he got to heal was because he heard someone else's story. Mm-hmm. And that's the power of stories, to be encouraged that you're not the only one and that there's hope. And so I have my books, coaching, podcasting, speaking. I'm really into the speaking and want to do a whole lot more of that. Been doing workshops this past year and every place I can find to do it. Trauma-informed self. I have a process called self. It's see, expose, love, and free, to go through the process to healing. And so it's self because that's where our choice resides. That's where our core of our ownership is at, is in ourself. And so I have trauma-informed self, calming yourself, loving yourself, and other things to help people get some hands-on things doing it. You don't just sit there and I talk to you. Because I think you need to be involved, because that's very important.
Yeah. Yeah, it is really important. So if you could speak to a younger you, what advice would you give to her when she was in the thick of raising two small children?
No condemnation. No condemnation, no condemnation, no condemnation, and over and over and over and over again. Because one, that's one of the first things a trauma survivor does is beat themselves up and shame themselves. And so that's one of it. But then moms do that. They think everything's on them. So that's it again. And that's also something that some churches tend to heap on people is condemnation. So that's why I repeat it over and over and over again. No condemnation. There, you know, you do your best and get help. Get help and align yourself with people who will love you through it. And grace is like oil. It makes it work, it slide in and out better. You know, that sounded kind of graphic sexually. I was not trying to go there. But anyway, you know, oil, it makes it smoother. It makes it easier. So it's like the anointing does that, but love does that. Grace does that. So surround yourself with people who will lift you up and help you. And if you really struggle with condemnation, then hire a coach or go to counseling, whichever is you need, because coaching is forward focused and counseling is backward focused. Maybe you need both, whatever, but get someone to help you. And I don't know if you have it in Canada, in America, they have a ministry called Stephen Ministries. Have you ever heard of that?
No, I haven't.
That's probably, I don't know where it's at, but I spoke to their Southeastern Michigan conference this year. And what they are is they're people in the church, but they're not licensed counselors or anything like that, but they just come alongside someone who's having a hard time. Mm-hmm. So if your ladies, they go to a church where they have a Stephen ministry, they could, you know, request a Stephen minister. That's someone who will come alongside to help. So get help and no condemnation.
Yeah. Give yourself grace.
Yes. But that's hard when you're in the condemnation cycle.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So you might need someone there to keep telling you and keep telling you and keep telling you again.
Yeah.
Again.
Be gentle on yourself. Give yourself grace. Mm-hmm. And don't abandon yourself to everyone else's needs, wants, desires. Mm-hmm. Checklists, all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is also a habit of trauma survivors.
And that, yeah, I kind
and
of
moms.
Did that.
Yeah.
I kind of lost myself in the mom role because I was so invested and so, at the beginning, very afraid of doing it wrong and breaking them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to ruin them for life. And so empty nest was really hard for me, but you know who helped me through that? It was my daughter. My daughter is who helped me through that and to take ownership of a new life in my own self. And so even if you fall down into that, you can get back up. You know, mm-hmm. there's the grace in that. So it's like, you're going to fall down. It's just a matter of where. So where are you going to fall down? Don't beat yourself up for falling down. You just get up. Just think about a little kid learning how to walk. That's a very clear picture for a mama. You know, when your kids learn to walk, I have never seen and hope I never do, can't imagine I ever would, anyone yell at a child for falling down when they're trying to walk. Can you imagine that? What's wrong with you? Why didn't you learn that? No, they're like their biggest cheerleader jumping up and down. The kid takes one step and you go ballistic. You're so excited for them. And so we need to give that same kind of cheerleading to ourselves.
Yeah. And sometimes when you're at the beginning of your journey, you don't know how to do that for yourself, which is why aligning yourself with a community of women who are also healing, who get you, can cheer you on and support you the way that you need to do it for yourself so that you can learn.
Yeah.
Because.
Exactly.
Because mamahood after trauma is hard. Mamahood in general is hard.
I was thinking that. Yeah, mamahood's just hard. Then you throw that trauma in there. Oh, boy.
Yeah. Yeah. But it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be done in isolation either. Right. There are communities. There are places and people who are waiting to support you.
Yeah. You just That's where the internet is a beautiful thing now. Because I didn't have that when my kids were little. The internet, we have this plethora of things available to us now. So ladies, take advantage of what is available to you. You don't have to be alone.
Yeah. So what are some tips, some things that you did well now that you've got the child rearing days in your rearview mirror? What are some things that you can look back and say, wow, that was a good choice?
One thing that my choice was that if I do one thing right, I had one thing. It's like I wanted to do a gazillion things right, like we all do. Mm-hmm. But I said, if I do one thing right, I got to do this one thing right. And I did. And that was, I wanted my children to know that they were loved and never doubt that. And that's something mm-hmm. I was successful at. My children know I love them. They know their dad loves them. They know that we did the best we could. And they are well aware of that. And in people who I interviewed for my podcast, I saw the difference. Children who grew up, even if they had trauma, if their parents loved them well, their trauma was greatly reduced than children who had parents who maybe they loved them, but they didn't know they were loved. That was my thing. My mom, when we connected later, you know, she communicated that, but they didn't communicate that to me in a way that I understood. I felt very unloved and rejected as a child. Mm-hmm. And so that changes how a child processes what they go through. Because I don't know, maybe every child goes through trauma. I kind of think that they might. Those statistics won't support that because life is hard, you know?
And life is really hard.
Yeah. So that's what I would say is one thing I did really well was I loved my children well. Even when I was messing up, they knew it was out of love. So.
Yeah. So what have you changed with how you grandparent versus how you parented? What's changed?
Well, I have learned to be much more emotionally intelligent because I had, I don't know if you're familiar with the term alexithymia.
No.
Alexithymia is a side effect of childhood emotional neglect. When you don't know your emotions, you don't know what you're feeling, and you don't know how to verbalize them. So I was there and I'm not there anymore. So I can be more emotionally intelligent with my grandchildren. I listen to them probably better than I listened to my children. And I look for opportunities to do that with them and to speak into them and encourage my children as parents, encourage them as parents and celebrate with them when I've started crying and told them how I am so amazed at how they parent. When I watch them, you know, my grandkids having a thing and one of my kids is addressing them and talking with them and listening to them and take a deep breath and, you know, calm yourself and walk. And I'm like going, and I'm like, that's so amazing. And then I want to commend them because that's going to help them even be better.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you see and recognize how your effort to make sure that your kids were loved and to not repeat the cycle of trauma as best you could is continuing and evolving?
Yes.
How powerful is that for your family?
Yes. Yes. Break the chain, break the cycle. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So
I mean, when I was growing up, I grew up in the generation where discipline was harsh and oppressive, and even abuse was considered normal to certain extents. You know, I was beaten, and I didn't do that to my kids. But I did do discipline, and the way I learned discipline and my studying in that was I did do spanking, but I did spanking very methodically. It was like they were warned. They knew exactly what was going on. We had a special paddle, so it was never out of anger. And it was, you know, sanded and shellacked and everything. So there's no rough edges or anything, because there was no desire for hurt or injury. The desire was for discipline is what I was looking for. But I was grown up under, you have to make the kids do stuff. And so I fell underneath some of that. But even in that process, when they would violate that, and then they would get a spanking, it would start with, do you know what you did? And we need to make sure that they knew what they did and what they did was wrong and they understood. And then it was very intentional, you know, a whack or two on the behind. We'd let them cry and come back, and then we'd hug them and pray with them. It was a whole big thing. It wasn't like I smack you because I'm mad. It wasn't like that. But my children don't even need to do that. And so for them to learn about implementing discipline in a different way, it's not about punishment. It's about discipline. It's about training and teaching. So even though I did it different, I would probably even do that different now if I could go back and repeat that, but I can't. But even talking with my kids, they understood. They never felt beaten. They never felt abused by that. They saw the discipline in it, even though they're choosing to not do it the same way with their kids. I respect that. So,
yeah. Yeah. So friend, if you're listening to today and you're thinking, well, I have to have it all together. I have to know, I have to be completely healed. First of all, healing is a journey, not a destination. And it's an evolution over time. It's not going to happen overnight. Second of all, doing the best that you can, giving yourself grace, being gentle with yourself, and acknowledging when you fall on your face or trip over something and make a mistake because you are human is okay. Communicating with your kids and making sure that they know that they are loved, that they are valued are some of the most important things that you can do. So, and they will pick up on that and they will improve upon that as time goes on.
You're reminding me of something else that I did in that process of how to communicate that love was, and some people will push back at this terminology, but I've even written an article about it on my blog for people to understand, because my generation was like, you don't do that. That's just wrong. And some people can go to an extreme with it where it's not helpful. I parented my kids relationally. I wanted to be friends with them. I was not their hangout friend, let's go party together kind of friend. It wasn't that kind of friendship. But a relationship, you have give and take, you have trust, you have, I want to talk with you about this. And even though I was imperfect in that, that was one of my directionals, was to be relational in my parenting, because a child is a person. They're a child, but yes, they're a person too. They have thoughts and feelings, and yes, they're not done yet. But that doesn't mean they're dumb, and it doesn't mean they don't know. And it doesn't mean that, you know, you get to be the ruler with the rod of iron over their head to just boss them around like, you know, some dictator. Mm-hmm. So it was relational in how I did that. And I remembered that when you were talking, I thought that was important to bring up.
Well, yeah, I think it as a parent, there is a difference between being the type of friend that goes and parties with someone, and the type of friend where you are offering wisdom and guidance, and there's a give and take, because you're right, your kids are people. And if you can't have a relationship with them, and that rapport is only as a superior over them, that changes how the dynamic is.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That's what some people get when they then have adult children. If the parent has parented from that authoritarian place, they do the same thing. They try to be the authority in the adult child's life, and that doesn't work either.
That doesn't fly.
It's like, no, they are the parent, and I need to come alongside and support. If I got an issue with something, I need to have a conversation. But
yeah,
they're still their kids. They're not my kids unless they're, you know, breaking the law or something like that. Then it's like, well, you know, you want them to eat Lucky Charms on Saturday, and I think they need to eat cottage cheese. Well, they get to eat Lucky Charms then, because you're the parent. Yeah. You get to choose.
Yeah. So how has becoming an author and having the opportunity to write been and contributed to your healing?
Well, my first book, the second half of the book, is my healing. Mm-hmm. Because I started to write the book thinking I was healed and went into counseling to, you know, help write the book, because I was going to be revisiting some things I knew would be really painful. But then in counseling, because she was a good counselor, because I had a bad counselor before there. Insert, if you have a bad counselor, get a different one. But my good counselor, she helped me unearth things I didn't know and call things trauma I didn't know. And she helped me heal from childhood emotional neglect when I didn't know the term, and neither did she. Mm-hmm. As she pointed it out, she called it something went terribly wrong.
Mm-hmm.
That's what she said when I talked to her about how I felt like I was not loved and my parents didn't care about me and whatever else I was saying. She went, whoa. And I was going on to some other topic. She went, wait a minute. I'm like, what? To me, that was just my normal. That mm-hmm. emotional neglect was my normal.
Mm-hmm.
And she brought me back and she started to tell me how it should have been. And I looked at her like a dog hearing a strange noise and like, what? That's like a thing? Mm-hmm. And she said, yeah, something went terribly wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And after I learned childhood emotional neglect, I reached out to her and said, are you familiar with this term? And she wasn't. And that's where I like to say, you don't have to know what something is called to heal from it either. If you are aiming toward healing and you get the help you need, call it whatever you want, just heal. So yes, writing that book, I knew the first 8 chapters when I sat down to write it, but the second 8 I learned while I was writing it and while I was in counseling for writing it. So yeah, it was a part of my healing, that first book. And it mm-hmm. delivers healing to other people as well. And there's a quote in it that's gone viral, but that was a revelation to me. So I see why people latch onto it. And it's about how trauma is personal. You know,
Oh, it's very personal.
But I didn't get that. Trauma was, you know, this regimented, measured thing to me, and it had to fall within these certain categories. It had to be war, it had to be sexual, or it had to be one of those. Like, no. And then I started to learn and got this epiphany about it and how we have to validate that. And we have to hear the screams that are going on inside of ourselves. And we have to mm-hmm. enter that pain and hear those screams for healing to begin, as the second half of that quote there.
Mm-hmm.
But then even after that, because it's called Emerging with Wings. And so in the generation I grew up with, which was oppressive, you know, I emerged with wings, so I should be all done now, right? Ta-da! You laugh because you know better. But I didn't know better. And so I was demanding of myself then, but I had to internalize all of that. It was like wet concrete. I had to let it set, and I needed to learn all these new things. And that's where my second book comes in, is how to take ownership of that healing and how to make it go deeper. And I interviewed 10 other people because, you know, there's more trauma than just mine. There's people who have mm-hmm. trauma in adulthood. There's people who have different kinds of trauma. There's men and women that I interviewed. There's young and older that I have. There's, you know, black and white and, you know, different. I mean, we all are different. And I needed to share that with people to help people take ownership of your life. You only get one life, and it's up to mm-hmm. you how you live it, and empower you to take ownership of your one beautiful life. Now, yeah. My newest, that's an amazing thing that God brought about through my 12-year-old grandson. He's an artist. You know, he draws all different kinds of stuff, and he was drawing all different kinds of tacos. He was drawing tacos, you know, doing this and tacos doing that, and taco from this country and taco from that. I mean, tacos doing all different things. And he was showing them to me. But then there was one burrito on the page, and the burrito was upset. And I'm like, what's wrong with the burrito? And he said he's upset because he's not a taco. Oh. And immediately I thought of the statistic of the second leading cause of death in children aged 10 to 14 is suicide, and how it's connected to self-esteem because of bullying and trauma. And kids don't internalize their inherent value. They have value simply because they exist, and to mm-hmm. internalize that. And that day at his house, I was over there visiting. I'm like trying to write out a story. We this has to be a book. And it turned, that was in June, and I published it October 4th. That was crazy how fast that came to be. And we're going to do like a storybook, but couldn't figure out how to do that. And I needed to get it out there quickly. So it's not a storybook. It's a different kind of activity book, but it does have stories in it. And all the characters are created by my 12-year-old grandson. And he created like a font of different letters for you to color in. And there's things, you know, I am loved and I matter, I have value, things like that. And there's word searches and puzzles and Mad Libs and mazes and all different kinds of things in there to help internalize that value and to talk about it. Because there's some big words in there. It's geared toward middle school. But the coloring pages are good for little kids because he's got those different tacos in there. But mm-hmm. then it's also the adults like the word searches and the crosswords and all of that. So you get the people doing it together, then you have a conversation. I'm reaching for that relational part of mm-hmm. the parenting. That's a tool that I think can really be helpful for mamas with their kids. Because it gives yeah. you an avenue to bring it up. Because talking yeah. about you matter and trauma or what's going on, it could be awkward. But if you're coloring a picture, or there's this word here, what does this word mean, Mom? I can't read this word. And then you talk about it.
Mm. Yeah. Wow. So where can people find your books? Are they available on Amazon, your website? Where can yes, we find them?
Available on Amazon. Because You Matter is generally at Barnes & Noble as well. But on Amazon is where people generally get them, but also all my books. And in case anyone's interested, if they're in a school or a hospital or anything like that, I have wholesale prices. Also, I had a nonprofit just do a wholesale order of my taco book, and she's putting them in gift bags for her nonprofit and taking them to hospitals to give to kids who are fighting leukemia.
Oh, wow.
You can get 50% off by doing a wholesale order. That's only through me. So you'd have to contact me. So for that.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Danielle, for being a guest on the show. I have thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. And friends, if you would like to connect with Danielle further, I will make sure to link all of her contact information in the show notes. Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. And ladies, before we go, I just want to say, I love you. I'm that lady on the internet who loves you. I want to be sure to tell you, I love you. You are loved. You are worthy of love, and you have great value. Mwah.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Mamahood After Trauma podcast. If you resonated with what you heard, please hit the subscribe button, hit the like button, and share it with a friend who would also benefit, because we rise together. Until next time, Mama, keep shining.